Welven to the Pocket Coven podcast, where magic meets mental health. I'm Amber Lenore, a witch and licensed psychotherapist.
I'm Callie Little, a sex educator and emotional support witch. And we're
the coven in your pocket.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Pocket Coven podcast, where we talk about our trauma and magic. Today, we are welcoming two witches that I have been so excited to get on the show. We have Risa Dickens and Amy Torek. Thank you for joining us today. It's so nice to have you here.
We're so excited to be in the Pocket Coven.
Thank you. I'm excited to be a member of your coven.
So we want to introduce you all to these lovely witches. They are the hosts of the Missing Witches podcast, which is also the title of the book that they've written about some amazing stories of, I guess, witch lineage. And to give you a little bit of insight into who these witches are, Amber's going to introduce us to Risa.
I certainly am. So Risa Dickens has an undergraduate honors, let's see if I can say this, a bachelorette in English literature.
Bachelorette number one.
Oh, that's amazing.
She likes long walks on the beach.
And a master's in communication studies. She helped found Warren Fashion Journal, writing feminist fashion history. Since then, she has worked in community building, marketing, and PR in tech for over 15 years and is currently a senior community director at Yelp. Welcome, Risa, the bachelorette of the hour.
Thank you.
And Amy Torek is an ESL teacher, counterculture enthusiast, professional musician, and visual artist designer with a BA in English literature and a postgraduate diploma in journalism. Risa and Amy were on a similar track, community and event organizing in Montreal, when they met backstage at a ukulele showcase. Together, they've worked their magic to create music, a coven, a podcast, and now a book. Both Risa and Amy live tucked into the woods of Quebec. That sounds so idyllic, y'all.
Yeah, it feels idyllic. I mean, I like to be, when I hear that word, especially idyllic, I like to be very clear that my spouse and I moved to the woods because we got priced out of the city. Because if we wanted to have a home of our own, it was either, you know, a 35-year mortgage, or we could find a little shack in the woods that nobody else wanted and fix it up until it was our dream home. So yes, like for everybody out there who's pining away for the idyllic woods life. You know, it was bargain hunting at the time, but obviously, you know, it has many, 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 many perks.
It's the true roots of cottagecore.
I mean, really, yeah, we could talk about cottagecore if you want to, but yeah, it's very that, yeah.
Yeah, our house was melting. I mean, I bought it and fell in love with this spot at the end of a road on a lake. And really didn't realize that I basically had none of the skills required except for the skills to like manifest all the things I need. But like in terms of how to actually repair crumbling foundations, the melting walls that you could put your hands through the studs. I mean, it was a dream home that has needed constant labor to be brought back from the edge of the forest eating it and the lake eating it. But yeah, we live in the woods.
That is a really beautiful kind of magic to have those, that like relationship with this melting house. It's so creepy and beautiful and sad and makes me feel like you're a caregiver for this shell, you know?
Yeah, caring for life out here is like a big part of what we write and think about. I forgot that my bio says that I work in tech and PR for Yelp. I don't do that anymore. That's new. Life has changed. I'm totally, totally just digging my roots into this whole other life.
Well, I did find one fun little completely irrelevant thing when I was looking on the internet about y'all before we had you on. Amy, you were on Canadian Idol.
Man, you know, it just goes to show, never do anything. People out there, never do anything. No, yes, I was. I'll briefly tell that story, as I've not told it in a very, very long time. But I'm a singer. I've always been a singer, and I've also always been a punk. But the year that I turned 28, Canadian Idol changed the age limit and raised it to 28. And so at that point, like, I call it the joke I took too far. Ultimately, like, I was just like, you know, you would see the show, and I would always kind of wonder, like, oh, how would I fare in this aspect? And how would I fare in that aspect? And one of the things that they used to do is they would make you form a little singing group. And that was always one of my favorite things as a viewer, like these people like forcibly creating these little New Kids on the Block singing groups. And anyway, long story short, I stayed until I had gone through the little singing group. It's like the first day, it's the mall part where you're literally just like one of hundreds, possibly thousands of people waiting in the mall. And a couple of my friends had come with me, and they went to the food court to whatever or wherever they went. And this old, like, sort of like very like a David Lynch movie character kind of old looking woman walked up to me and said, "What are these people doing here?" And I said, "Well, it's a singing competition and everyone's like waiting in line, you know, to audition for the singing competition." And she said to me, "No, I mean, what are all these people doing here when there are things out there that need to be done?" And I was like, "You're right." And my friends came back and I was like, "Let's just go. Let's go. The old David Lynch woman is right. Let's just leave." And my friends were like, "Come on, dude. Like, you know, you've already been in this line for 2 hours. You've only maybe got an hour." Like, and then anyway, I didn't take the David Lynch ladies' advice. Maybe I should have, but I do want to mention that there's always a weird old lady in any given situation, if you're paying attention, who will come up to you. Some old mall witch who will give you their advice if you're looking. Thank you for asking about that. That's so funny. I hadn't even thought about it in so long. Thanks for asking.
I love this story of you being a chaos bard.
Isn't there a moment that made it on TV of Sass Jordan comparing you to Bjork and you looking at the camera and then like next episode you're gone? Or am I not remembering that correctly?
No, their editors were sound and cut out Sass Jordan comparing me to Bjork. That's right. Like the hard J in Bjork. Bless CanCon, you know, Sass Jordan was awesome, but and for the record, I sound nothing like Bjork. I sound nothing like Bjork. I don't know where that came from, but the hard J just really stuck with me enough that I guess I told Risa that part of the story.
Love that. And I watched that video because you posted it on your old ass Tumblr. So I watched your audition and I was like, ooh, Janis Joplin vibes. Never in a million years would I have said neither Bjork nor Bjork.
Yeah. And I think the actual correct pronunciation is Bjork. And so like, it's like, it, judge not lest ye be judged, I suppose, is the ultimate. Everyone pronounces it wrong. So what up, Sass? I think we're all in that same boat. But yeah, thank you. I'll take a Janis Joplin. I'll take a Janis Joplin any day of the week.
Yeah, that was the fun detour. And now on to only serious witchcraft and yes. Trauma. Mm-hmm.
Back to trauma.
So, Risa and Amy, I would love to know just anything you wanted to give us or our listeners about your personal practice as a witch. I really love giving our listeners just different pictures of what a witch can look like so it's more accessible. So, I would love to start with you, Risa. What does witchcraft look like in your life?
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking today about like if I could trace back when this sort of relationship to the weird or sense of like having a communication with the universe or the earth or something started in my life. Because I can think about how I practice now, and that's informed by like things I learned. But I mean, I was like a teenager. I haven't thought about this in so long, but there was a period in my life as a teenager where like parties consisted of going to these like suburban basements with a group of people and turning out all the lights. And people would take turns like lying on the floor with their head in my lap, and I would lead them on these like strange meditation, conversation, guided meditation journey things that I just like felt equipped to do. Like I just like had the confidence of like a 15-year-old to be like, yes, come, I will lead you, you know? And I fucking love that. Like I love that like teenage girls are just like in some ways so terrifyingly powerful, you know? And they sort of know it. I think Pam Grossman talks about that like there's a reason why teenage girls are so commodified in our culture. And it's like, it's a recognition of their power, you know? My practice now is, and you guys talk about mental health and trauma, and my practice has been very much driven by moments when I needed those resources, you know? They filled a gap for me. I didn't have a relationship with religion anymore by the time I was a teenager. I had loved the like singing of church and like the church camp I went to or whatever, but I was really alienated from all of that and by the violence in it and what I was learning about colonialism and sexual assault and women's history and stuff. And it just was not a place for me. But yeah, now very much it's always been something that I turn to when I need to, I don't know, like anchor this feeling of like spinning out of control or like just terror or just how to process something or heal from something. And now it's really connected to the land that I live on here, to the property I live on here, to this lake and, you know, things I've, apple seeds I've buried under rocks here, or I mean, my placenta is on our land here. You know, there's things we've like woven and hung in the woods here. And those now are all touch points for me of times when I was like really scared and scared for my daughter's health or for my own. And something about that ritual really just eased that time. And then when I look back, the things that I've accomplished, you know, empowered by those rituals is like shocking to me. So I feel really kind of alive with my own power thanks to it all. And I can kind of see it written around me. And so that's very healing as well.
I love that you name how your magic has a strong relationship with place, because I think that that's true for so many of us. And you know, there's just something really magical about when you have an active relationship with the space around you, with the earth around you. And it's something that so many people, for so many different reasons, might not have. But I love that you're weaving your magic into the land around you. That's really lovely.
Can I say, I feel like I had that relationship in a different way in the city too. Like in like, you know, shitty apartments when I couldn't make rent, or other times in my life, you know, I think that relationship that I started to build to friends and walking routes through cities and walking through alleyways. And Amy talks about this one bush that would be alive with birds in her apartment in the city. And the route between Amy and my house at a time in my life was like through a public market. It was like very important to me. And when I drive through the city now, I see all those places. So I just want to make sure people don't feel like that relationship is not available to you if you don't live out in the woods, you know?
Absolutely. I could say a lot about how much I love like the building that I'm in. I'm in a 100-year-old building in a pretty bustling part of the city. And like, I have this tree that I am deeply in love with that is right outside my living room window. And like, I like all the trees here, but that tree is so special to me. And it really is available in the spaces that we're in. I think that I want to also note that it can be hard to create a relationship with this land because it's so colonized. You know, a lot of people are going to feel that divorce from the land for a variety of reasons, and that's totally valid. But no matter if you are in like a beautiful, serene, melting house by a Canadian lake or in the middle of a busy city, like the land is always available for relationship. It's just about healing the grief that exists there, I think.
I also love this conversation because it reaffirms that being a witch is an internal state for a lot of us. I know it is for me. Being a witch is internalized. It's not about exactly where I am. It helps if I'm in the forest. I can co-regulate with a tree, much different than I can co-regulate with a McDonald's. And at the same time, you know, my witchcraft is right in here. It's right inside of my body. And that way I can access it wherever I want to go. So thank you for that. I love it.
Yeah, I definitely think of myself as like, you know, non-binary, like a city witch and a woodland witch, because obviously, you know, the trees and the creeks, and it's so sacred, and obviously there's like an energy that pulses through it, but also art galleries and concert halls and cafes. These are also magical spaces that, you know, granted we humans have built them, but built them for what? For art, for conversation, for like those super magical, amazing, like psychological and mystical journeys that we're on when we're at a concert or in a dance floor. So yeah, once again, like I consider myself completely non-binary when it comes to city and country. I feel as with most things that like both are sacred, you know, both are extremely sacred to me.
Yes. And Amy, can you tell us more about your identity as a witch? I love where we're going already, and you're already getting me all juicy and inspired. So just tell us more. What does witchcraft look like in your life?
Yeah, I think, again, I think when I was younger, it was like a seeking. And maybe now that I'm a little more experience, that I've had more sunrises and sunsets than I had many tides that have rolled into my beach. It becomes more of like, once again, like a total integration into my life. Like you say, like it's an internal, it's a perspective that informs everything. And like I was saying before about, you know, art galleries and concert halls being sacred, I think we have the ability, not just the potential, but the ability to render every moment sacred. You know, it's hard under capitalism and under patriarchy, obviously, you know, like it can be hard, but you can also, you know, think of washing the dishes as witchcraft. When you make your tea, you know, it's a cup of tea. And for millions of people, it's just a cup of tea. Also great, you know, tea is great for you. But for the witch, you know, a cup of tea is like a hot liquid steam. It's both air and water, and your mug is maybe the earth, and you know, the boiling, the process of boiling is the fire. And so you can see all these four elements, and you're inhaling the hot air, and we haven't even gotten to the tea bag yet. We haven't even chosen what herb we're putting into it, you know? So once again, like this is the perspective of the witch for me is the rendering of sacred. And I do want to add the recognizing of sacred. Once again, it's a non-binary existence for me. It's like making things sacred and also recognizing the always already sacred. which is also everything. So hope that clears that up for you.
The holistic view, I think, is something that's so integral to witchcraft, because when we look at being a witch as just being, like you're talking about, you know, you eliminate the barrier to entry. You eliminate the ability to even gatekeep, because yes, it can just be a cup of tea, or it can be an elixir. It can be a spell of self-love or health or whatever. And so much of the commodification of magic and witchcraft as a practice, I think, is about creating more and more barriers when there is none. We can do magic without anything because it is us.
Yeah, and I think that, once again, that's an issue of colonialism, is that we have been taught some bizarre idea of gatekeeping in which you need to have this or have that, or even, and Risa knows this is something I get real hot about, so if I start to rant, you can tell me to, you know, calm myself. there's this... I mean, it's not just having things and buying things, but it's this notion that because it came from oral history, because it came from oral tradition, that it's somehow less valid than the knowledge that someone else came and wrote down. So to me, I think of witchcraft very metaphorically. I'm a born cynic, but I also have to, I think we all have to, leave that door open for the possibility that these specific combinations of specific things actually do have some kind of voice in the universe that we don't understand. I'm willing to believe that, like, you know, I'm off the top of my head, I'm going blank, but like that rosemary is somehow linked to prosperity, because why not? Because these ideas have lasted for tens of thousands of years. Right. So I think like we're always very open to, like, you know, you are the magic and do the magic your own way. And I'm totally behind that. I have substituted ginger ale for ginger, you know, on more than one occasion. But at the same time, like, leave the idea open that magic is real, in the same way that we've now learned that burning sage kills airborne bacteria. I'm not saying it's going to go and, like, don't take it to the hospital, like, don't not go to the doctor. We know all this, but like, it, burning sage has properties that do clean the, and I'm using air quotes here, bad spirits out of the air. We know this. Science has told us this. So the mystical man with his silly burning of silly leaves is correct. Graveyard dirt, we know that graveyard dirt can leach poison into itself, rendering itself a weapon. So the old witch doctor maybe isn't so crazy. So anyway, that informs a lot of what I think too. Like, as a born cynic, as a person living in the modern world, I really think a lot of it is metaphorical for our own agency and our own strength. But I really just want to keep that door wide open to the notion that this combination of crystals and herbs is, like, legitimately speaking into the universe. I think I said it was going to be a rant.
It's a wonderful rant, and a couple things came up for me. One is that I also have had to be with my own cynicism and the way that I've been using it in order to facilitate a connection with witchcraft is, maybe I don't know every fucking thing. Maybe I am not the master of every fucking thing. Maybe mystery is something that I can acknowledge. Maybe that is a wonderful thing. Can I let that be okay? Can I allow for mystery to be in my life?
And I think that that's, like, one of the main thrusts of the Missing Witches Project, is that maybe we don't fucking know everything. And maybe even the stuff that we were taught, maybe those people didn't fucking know everything either.
Exactly. I've worked in research. I've seen how crooked it can be and how you can prove absolutely anything. If you have enough money and power and academic influence, you can make all sorts of truths and answers. And me having a master's degree allows me to be a therapist, but the love that I bring is not something that I acquired at school. And that is what makes me most effective, right? And that's something that I've really loved about reading Missing Witches is all of these stories and all of these perspectives that are just grounded in lived experience. And then I feel congruence between their experience and my experience. And that is more validating and connecting than any hierarchy telling me what is true. Risa, I wonder what's coming up for you around all of this.
Yeah, I have so many feelings about all of this. I'm really excited that you're reading the book and that you connected with the idea that's so fundamental to us and to our project of like prioritizing real people. You know, I talk about this in the most recent episode about Scott Cunningham that like, and you know, what an awesome example of somebody who's so rooted in belief about just, you know, the power of the individual stone that you find in front of you is equal to any expensive crystal that someone is going to try to sell you in a shop. The fact that things are expensive don't give them power, you know? So I was thinking about that while you were talking, but we also talk in this episode about, you know, that we were interested in goddesses. We're still interested in goddesses. We're interested in archetypes. I fucking love Sabrina the Teenage Witch, you know, with all everything problematic about it. I love Willow, you know, I always have and always will. But we are interested in real people. Like who are the people? Like, especially women and people of marginalized genders, like, what did they think? Because they are excluded from the history of ideas. They're excluded from the history of art. And what happens if we open the hypothesis that what they thought about the universe and the world and spirituality and their bodies and their relationship to the earth, like what happens if we include those hypotheses? What does it change for us in what we can believe? And then I get really excited about the idea, you know, there's this sort of perpetual rift in academia and in the world, this sort of brokenness between science and art, right brain, left brain, you know, and there's some interesting collaborations trying to figure out how those perspectives can be fused. And we need to kind of come together out of these weird ivory towers to save the world. You know, our planet is dying. And I think witchcraft meets both in both those places, right? It's a place where we're fundamentally interested in craft. We're interested in how we do things with our hands. We're interested in the properties of the earth that we understand and have yet to understand. We're interested in, you know, the million species of mushrooms that we don't know yet. We're interested in, you know, so it's this meeting place where, okay, we can discover what's unknown and we can call to it with all of the power of ritual and poetry and song, that those are the tools of the witch. And what we're calling to and what we're speaking to is the and what we're changing with our practice is the material world, is the world of science. Those were the like six of the 700 things that I was thinking about while you were talking.
Nice. Yes, that's fantastic. You know, as you're speaking, I am now getting all excited about the connections between mental health and magic, mental health and witchcraft. And the two of you have been taking in and absorbing all of these stories, plus you're having your own embodied experience. There are so many ways to ask you the question, how do witchcraft and mental health inform each other? I would love to hear from both of you on this. And maybe Amy, do you want to start off? Like, how does mental health and witchcraft connect?
Yeah, I think my mind has become this like spider web of like, you know, various intersecting mind map thoughts. When you ask that question, I mean, how doesn't it, I guess, is the cop-out answer. You know, like I want to talk about depression. And I want to talk about how depression makes you feel like there's no point to anything. And living in the modern world sometimes really reinforces that message. And so magic to me is a resistance against that. It's this notion that everything matters. It's the opposite of nihilism in that way, because every breath that you're taking in and out is an exchange with the universe. And again, like, I'm a mystical bitch, but like, again, like, I'm so rooted in like cynicism. And something that came up before, like, someone was reading the book, and they someone who loves me but doesn't know anything was reading the book because they love me, not because they want to think about witchcraft, you know, and they were struck at how rational it was. And to me, that's the whole thing. I am a witch because it is rational, because I can see the moon and the sun. I can see the way that a flower will bend itself toward light. I can see the dance that's happening in astronomy, biology, physics. We know these things. It's the most rational approach, if you ask me. But I always want to keep in mind that we, as humans, we often take on these things that can help us as obsessions. You know, I've seen friends of mine have a problem and go to their tarot deck and then spend 6 hours doing reading after reading after reading and not getting calm or answers from it, just sort of becoming increasingly agitated and obsessed. And, you know, like, doing divination over and over and sort of like spending so much time on divination that they are ceasing to take action in the practical world, if that makes sense, in this, you know? So for me, again, like, non-binary in every sense, I think that like there's everything in moderation. Again, just to use this cliche, that we have to balance our work with the divine with our work with the material. You know, I think that writing a letter to Santa is a beautiful gesture. I think that writing a letter to your congressperson is also a wonderful gesture of spell work. And to me, again, there's this, I was learning about how we learn. And something that was so important to me about learning how we learn is this notion that we need focused and diffuse thinking. For our brains to learn at their best, we need that, like, what we think of as, I'm using air quotes here, hard work, focused study. Sure, we need that. We need to do that. But in order for our brains to actually, like, absorb and synthesize information, we also need diffuse thinking, which happens when we're out for a walk or making a cup of tea or, you know, sweeping the floor. We need both of these things to achieve our best working self, you know? But there are so many things, patriarchy again, and capitalism and oligarchy, most obviously colonialism, that say there is only one correct way of doing things. And so to tie it back again in a little pink bow to mental health, people told me I'm crazy. People been telling me I'm crazy. People been telling me I'm crazy ever since I can remember. And maybe there's that moment where you go, okay, what can I learn from my crazy? If I'm thinking differently from you, what can I learn from this? Maybe thinking differently than you is a good thing. And again, I've had my struggles. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not coming in here like, yeah, being sick in the head is great. You know, taking medication for anxiety is awesome. I don't recommend it, but I do think that witchcraft has enabled me personally to inspect that other side. Maybe I'm not the one who's crazy. You know, maybe it ain't me. And learning about these women that are in this book and the ones that we talk to and the, you know, in contemporary conversations, like, it's so validating to know that whether or not these stories were attemptedly erased, that these women existed and these women were magic And these women got called crazy. And these women were dismissed and demeaned. So it really just makes me more focused on, you know, allowing myself, again, I'm using air quotes, the crazy.
I love that you just touched on, I mean, so many things, but the biggest thing that I see looking at the book and the podcast, Missing Witches, shows us that all of these women and people who were swept under the rug of history, not only did they matter, but these are the people we come from. And like, you can sweep things under the rug, but they're still there. And I love that you two are shaking the dust off of these stories and showing us that even if most people forget them, they still matter. Like, doing the magic still matters. It's really beautiful.
I do just kind of want to bring it back to like a very material and practical space, because we talk a lot about ancestors and ancestor veneration. And it took me into my 30s to realize that a lot of my depression was a result of a malfunctioning thyroid. And I spoke to a couple doctors to ask them if I could get my thyroid tested. They're like, oh, you're just tired. Oh, you're just stressed. Oh, you're just whatever, you know, typical. And then when I came back and I said, my grandmother had a thyroid disorder, then and only then did they agree to test me. So I think once again, we can see this metaphorically and we can see it very practically, where our ancestors have been carrying these messages through our DNA, whether it's a wonky thyroid or like infinite wisdom that we haven't tapped into yet.
Risa, I saw that you had wanted to share something.
Yeah, well. I did. I wanted to share like 7,000 things. There was like a waft of angry and passionate and mentally ill and mentally healing ancestors in my body for a while there while you were talking. Mostly, I was thinking about this piece in the book because I was reading it today for the audiobook. I was thinking about my grandfather because I think I had this similar instinct to Amy when you first asked the question about mental health, that there is a piece of this new age world, witchcraft world, that wants to take advantage of our mental ill health, that wants to take advantage of our disease and our brokenness from each other to sell us cures, you know, to sell us, you know, whether it's multi-level marketing oils or whatever it is. And we talk about it in the book because Monica's show, one of the first witches that we talk about, just, you know, her son was dying of cancer and they lived together and they went to spiritualists and mediums and she watched him kind of get taken into this rebirth or movement that was incredibly right-wing and patriarchal, and it filled her with rage, you know, very justified rage. She talks about how there was no recognition in this world that women are life bearers, that the earth is our mother. There was nothingness. It was just, you know, how much positivity and prosperity thinking do you have? And, you know, a lot of this movement gets co-opted. And Sylvia Federici talks about, you know, capitalism doesn't give a fuck about how many candles you buy. Like, capitalism is very happy to sell you witchcraft. That's no problem for late stage capitalism, you know? So I think we do have to watch out for our mental health. We have to watch out that, you know, we don't slip into buying and selling each other cures or, you know, the love and light sort of take on witchcraft, where we can just be like overly focused on care to the point of coddling or to the point of like not going back out into the world armed with what we've learned. So I did want to, I was thinking, can I read a piece of the book? This is something I was thinking about today. It starts with Monica's show and then goes into a piece that I wrote. And it does talk about, first I was talking about my grandfather dying of cancer, buying a mountain of expensive oils and vitamins, and then getting taken in by the Iraqi currency scam. One day hoping he could buy a miracle cure, and the next dreaming he could turn his small savings into millions so he might leave us something. Something more, I guess, than all our memories of his great gentleness and optimism. And ultimately, those two scams were the same. Patriarchy stripped him of the right to a self-loving identity beyond that of provider. and his wound made him a mark to the con men of the New Age. Monica Show writes, in the New Age movement, there's no recognition that women were the creators of the most ancient cultures, and that the original mother of humanity and ancestor goddess was African and Black. Hers is the luminous darkness that creates life. There's no recognition of women's shamanistic death and rebirth every month when we bleed, that women are the guardians of the twilight zones between life and death as we risk our lives giving birth, bringing spirits from the other world womb to the earth plane. Women are always the communicators with the great unknown. And then we wrote, here's one secret of why they burn witches. Witchcraft and activism are one. With our acts, words, and rituals, we summon a better world and we fight inequality. Yes, we summon it for ourselves. Personal healing, joy, and fulfillment, all acts of love and pleasure are our world-changing rituals. Individual healing from trauma helps set a piece of the pattern of the universe into a new ancient rhythm of resounding care. Care deviates the drumbeat of trauma on repeat. Caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare, said Audre Lorde. But self-care, changing the world for ourselves, is only half the work of the witch. This is low tide, and after low comes high tide. You can cut that out if it's too long.
No, it's beautiful and it's staying.
Are you kidding me? I just want to listen to that over and over again. I was like fighting with not crying when you were saying that. I love everything about that. Obviously, I'm having a big reaction. And I really also appreciate you holding space for there to be some truth telling around how easy answers are being peddled through spiritual communities. And I see that in psychotherapy too. If you have a therapist that claims to be able to make you well, I would worry about them. If you have a therapist or a witch in your life who wants to help you understand yourself so that you can make yourself well and they can help resource you enough so that you can see your power, that is very different than being sold some line about how you can be solved as if you're a math problem. Life is just not that simple. It's much more dynamic. So thank you for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're, none of us are math problems. We're all like math experiments, really, you know? Not so much problems, but experiments. And when you do an experiment, the experiment doesn't fail if your hypothesis is incorrect, because you've equally learned, you know, that the opposite of your hypothesis, for example, is true, you know? And again, that's like being a witch. We so much do our best. It's so difficult in this society that wants us to smile and don't cry and, you know, buck up and all of those things, you know, it's freeing to be a witch and know that like your vulnerability is also powerful. You know, one of the great contradictions of witchcraft is that vulnerability is power. And I think once again, for people who are struggling, and especially for people who are struggling alone, we talk about it all the time where it's like, oh, you know, tell somebody. And for those of us who have been there, we sort of like, you know, rudely chuckle to ourselves because it's not always so easy to reach out to somebody, let alone to say the thing, to say the horrible thing, you know, that is like sitting there in your throat. You know, it's not easy, but like, damn, does it help? You know, in witchcraft, we have our circles, and I'm a big believer that these happen in multitude of forms. You know, they don't have to be like coven circles. They can be, you know, card games or sewing bees or whatever, like any place where you feel safe to express. I've never expressed something vocally and not had its weight somehow lifted. You know, I've never, it always seems worse before I say it than it does after I say it. Even like, I'm a big believer in writing things down, but there is something about vocalization, and once again, maybe because it's more ancient and more primal, but there's something about saying it out loud that is magic.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if you've read Joan Didion's book on magical thinking. I was reading it like years ago and my mom was like, oh, I'm glad you're reading that. And I was like, what the fuck? That's like a sort of a sharp dig, you know, because the way she meant it was that she was concerned for my own magical thinking, you know, that I can be subject, and that like the biggest kind of mistakes, which ultimately made to, you know, some huge, wonderful life change for me. But like the biggest mistakes I made in my life, looking back, was when I was really convinced that the world and my relationships and the decisions I was making were one thing when they were like pretty obviously another thing. You know, like I thought somebody was a good person when they were like pretty obviously like a really shitty person or whatever it was. Like I can be very subject to magical thinking. I see it in my life, you know, where I want something to be true. I don't want to be sick. And so I think it, I can just sort of maybe meditate it away or something, but I need to say it out loud. I need to be honest about the things that are wrong, and having like a circle of women, like a coven of women, you know, on my porch in the old days in Montreal, we'd go to the community garden and get salad stuff and make a salad and drink wine and like say all the sad, fucked up, real, true things that like were behind the social performance, and seeing those things and being honest about those things. And then being honest about what I really, actually, really, really fucking wanted. That was the magic. So yeah. That was a key to mental health for me, beyond the kind of trapping of being stuck in an illusion.
Yeah, I just want to add to that, that again, in keeping with this non-binary universe that we live in, is that, you know, again, I anxiety is like my number one struggle. If I had to pick, I've got a top five, but if I had to pick, you know, my struggle would be anxiety. I talk about it in the book, the first panic attack I remember, I was like 7 years old. You know, like this is my cross to bear, as it were, as it is, you know, as it would seem. But in integrating, you know, what we call the shadow, I think it's important, again, to take these value judgments off of the things. Obviously, once again, it sucks. But at the same time, what an anxiety disorder is an extremely powerful imagination. And having an extremely powerful imagination is also really cool, because it doesn't just tell me about the horrible things that are inevitable or potential or possible. It also tells me about, again, the crazy, there goes crazy Amy with her crazy ideas, but it's, you know, maybe that same, it's all that same root of a super powerful imagination. And again, I think being a witch has helped me to sort of like turn that dial of imagination toward the amazing things that I can manifest, and not just the inevitable, you know, doom that is lurking around every corner. It really, a very powerful imagination can be as much a source of joy as it is of terror.
That's fantastic. That really brings home for me just a perspective shift that I have to constantly make when I'm working with folks. If I join with their sense of being a problem, because a lot of us who are struggling with our mental health have an internalized sense, I am a problem. I am very identified with my symptoms. I am my symptoms. And I will sometimes join with their hopelessness. Wow, they're such a problem. We got to figure out what we can do to solve this depression. And I reframe myself by looking at them just a little bit differently. They are someone who is learning how to use their magic. They don't quite know how to do that yet. They're a magician. An anxious person is a highly imaginative person. And anxiety is energy, just like so many other things. And if they can learn how to use that, they're going to find wellness so much more easily and more powerfully than if some intervention I prescribe, you know, reduces their symptoms temporarily. That is not as sustainable as them having self-mastery. And we don't heal alone. We heal in community. We heal in connection. And that kind of brings me back to what Risa was saying about like having a circle of women, having other people that can hold all of that with you and can model what it looks like to be masterful over the self so that maybe you can learn how to do that too.
I just, cause super quickly, I just like, I always think about that scene from Midsommar. I'm not really spoiling it if anyone hasn't seen it, but there's this scene where the main character is weeping and weeping on the floor and all of the, you know, the townspeople gather around her, and it's really creepy, but at the same time, like they're all weeping with her and like, she's going, and they're going, like it's mimicking her sorrow and despair. And it's like, you get it. You get why she's like, all right, I'm going to stay with these people, because it's almost like the first time that she's had anyone like empathize with her pain and like allow her to just. So yeah, I always think of Midsommar when I think of that, like the power of the circle and just like, cry with me. Don't tell me not to cry. Cry with me.
We are hardcore fans of Midsommar here on the Pocket Coven podcast, and definitely send each other a lot of memes about it. I love that parallel. Absolutely. You know, when I watched that film for the first time with my spouse, who is a witchy, beautiful elf, but not nearly in this shit, you know, I was saying like, God, that's so beautiful. And they were like, this is a cult. And I was like, no, it's so beautiful. I mean, yeah, maybe. And yes, and. But it, that parallel is so lovely, because I think something, you know, you both just spoke about, Risa, you were saying like the weight is lifted after you speak it into existence, and you're both talking about just how powerful and ancient speech is, really. And here you are telling the stories of those who maybe didn't get to tell their own story, and lifting the voices of people past and present, sharing your own stories. You know, we do it too here on our podcast. And this is powerful shadow work for ourselves, but it's also, I know from being a listener of podcasts like yours, it's powerful to hear people tell these stories, because even when we're not presently in circle with somebody, when you're listening to an episode like this about shadow work, about these really complex subjects, you are in circle and you hear your own resonance in other people. So I just love that you're both here sharing all that vulnerability with us.
Yeah, there's something that's like super mystical about the idea that you can listen to someone tell their story and feel heard somehow. That's high magic to me. That someone can tell their story and you can somehow feel like you are being acknowledged, that your story is somehow also being told. I think it's amazing. I mean, you know, humans and art, you know, I just, it's one of those things where I could just like sit slack-jawed and like think about humans and our relationship to art and how art is therapy and maybe the oldest therapy, if you include music as art, which I do.
Yeah, I wanted to say, thinking about art and being heard, I was reading somewhere that sort of a really popular theory or an acknowledged theory of why the original cave paintings are where they are was not just that it was a documentation of hunting places or of the spirituality of animals, but that those places, when you sing in them, have really spectacular resonance. So they're echo chambers. They marked where you needed to go to sing the stories of the souls of those animals and of the souls of your people. And so, you know, really fundamental core to our understanding of art is hearing and being heard by the earth.
Yeah. Risa, you used the word echoing, which is something that we come back to all the time. Like this idea of reverberation, again, magic. a very tiny act that you do in your apartment, being able to ripple waves out and echoes and bouncing. You know, we know that this happens. We know that you can produce a sound with your vocal folds and the movement of your tongue, have it bounce off a cavern back into your ear. Who knows where else? Like, this is, I know it sounds super magical, but this is like really basic science. You know? So again, like, Risa, you're talking about these sacred places that are extra echoey. And I think of that like literally and metaphorically, you know, that there are these places that maybe when you do things there, they echo just a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we could easily sit and chat with you both for hours. I would love to do that someday in the flesh when we're all inoculated and planes happen again between countries. It'll be so exciting. But in the meantime, where can we and the listeners of the Pocket Coven podcast find you both?
You can find us at www.missingwitches.com. That's our website, and you can listen to our podcast there. It's also, you know, wherever you find your favorite podcasts, but we do have a list going, and then our show notes are there too. So if you're curious about some of the research that goes into the episodes or a little more background on the people that we interview, that's all on our website at missingwitches.com. And then we're pretty active on Instagram as well. So all socials, we're at Missing Witches.
I was just going to say, we're also on Patreon. We love our patrons. They're pretty rad. We're doing more with that community there now too. We love there. It's like a core coven for us of people who have been supporting us from the beginning and new people who are joining us now. And we're doing like full moon after party Zooms with them starting in May. And we release meditations and hopefully some classic Amy rants about the universe. So yeah, we're doing more stuff there. So if you want to find another place to hang out with us, you're invited. And then we have a book that we would love for you to read.
It's a beautiful book. It's so well researched. You know, you two have just filled it with incredible readable academic essays, essentially. It's such a welcoming book full of wisdom and information. I'm so happy to have my hands on it. And it's also really pretty.
Thank you. And so much. I was going to say, I'm like tumbling on my words. You're both very beautiful. I mean, Risa, you feel to me like just like a strong and abundant tree. And Amy, I just want to be you when I grow up. So I just really...
Let me say this. I am a fuck it prodigy, and I don't expect any of you at home to have like the level of fuck it that I have achieved in my 44 years, but like, please work toward it. You know, if I'm a role model for one thing, let it be fuck it. Your rules, your body, your home, your life, your rules. Fuck 'em. Fuck it.
I love that. One of my main life mottos is fuck it. And I always say, take that as you will.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you both so much. If you want to hear more from Risa and Amy, we do have a little bit of a fun conversation about psilocybin and other exciting things over on our Patreon. And make sure, hey, if you like our stuff and you're already following us there, go give our pals, the Missing Witches, a follow on Patreon as well. And we will see you next week.